This is The Guardian.
Today, a fight is coming over who controls the moon. And it's not going to be a battle between countries.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
"2001 is just the greatest film ever made, and it's set in two-thirds of it set on the moon. And when I first saw it, I was thought I'd died and gone to heaven."
This is Robin McKee.
I'm the science editor of The Observer, have been so for the last 42 years, and I've covered everything from AIDS to zoology or archaeology to you name it.
And in that time, there's one topic that's always really grabbed him.
Astronomy and space, I've got that, still got that kind of boyish sort of interest in it, and it always keeps me going.
"Houston, Roger, we copy, and we're standing by for your CTV. I'm going to step off the land now."
The moon is always there. We set foot on it now more than 50 years ago.
"That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind."
It's easy to take it for granted, but Robin never has.
The moon is special for various reasons, but one, it's the nearest astronomical body to the Earth.
"But I can see the footprints of my boots and the treads in the fine sandy particles."
The force of gravity is about a sixth of what it is on Earth, so you could have no trouble getting about. You bounce about all over the place. If you go on the lunar night, which is 14 Earth days long, it's incredibly cold. And when you go during the day, it's, you know, the sun is overhead, but there's no atmosphere to heat up.
"I'd like to evaluate the various spaces that a person can traveling on the surface."
"Magnificent desolation" is what Buzz Aldrin described the lunar surface. White, bleached soil, and the only sign of life is when the Earth rises and hangs above the moon. It's a reminder, hanging there in the sky, it's a reminder of other worlds, and this is not the only one. But it should be a warning to us how we look after it, because we haven't looked after our own one very well, and I hope we can do a little bit better the other one.
Over the four decades Robin's been the science editor at The Observer, humanity has been shrinking away from the moon. No manned missions, just a handful of soft landings, dwindling funding for NASA and other space organizations. But that's about to change. Japan is planning to land its first ever unmanned craft on the lunar surface today. This year, all of a sudden, lots and lots of rockets are headed for our closest neighbour in space, and many of them will be launched by private corporations. It's part of a deal between governments and businesses to get people back on the moon and eventually onto Mars. For now, everyone's interests are aligned, scientists and space entrepreneurs like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. But make no mistake, Robin says, that's not going to be the case for long. And unless we get rules in place quickly, we're headed for a fight over an important question. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, who owns the moon? Robin, just last week, there was an attempt by an American spacecraft to make a soft landing on the moon for the first time in many decades. Tell me about that mission and what made it different.
Six, 5, 4, 3, we have ignition.
Yes, it's called the Peregrine lander, robot lander.
And liftoff of the first United Launch Alliance Vulcan rocket, launching a new era in spaceflight to the moon and beyond.
The interesting thing about it was on a private launch vehicle and it was built privately. And this is kind of represents the new way that America plans to go back to the moon, not using totally tax-funded missions as the Apollo missions were. This new wave, it's going to be private enterprise. It's going to play a major role. You might think of it as the equivalent of when the aviation industry started. It was a lot of private companies that were the pioneers. And I think NASA would like that those days to come back and see a lot of individual entrepreneurs take over much of the legwork of getting to the moon.
We have good hydraulic pressure on both engines, good chamber pressure on both engines, everything looking good.
And this was an attempt, a soft landing on the moon with a whole package of different instruments.
The first American space mission for more than half a century, aimed at making a landing on the moon, has run into an early technical hitch. The Peregrine 1 robot lander...
Unfortunately, despite a perfect, flawless launch, it leaked fuel and it's not going to get there and it's going to burn up in the atmosphere sometime soon.
OK, so this Peregrine mission to the moon failed, but how many other moon missions are planned for this year?
Dozens. NASA has put $2.6 billion towards its private enterprise. In other words, it's giving these companies money to build the rockets. It's helping them set this up. China, India, Europe, all going back to the moon big time. You know, we're all lining up there. All at the moment with robot probes in the short term. In the longer term, America and Europe, and I think Canada, are cooperating on the Gateway project, which will happen. It'll be the beginning of the colonizing the moon.
Why? Why this rush all of a sudden to head back there after being away from it for so many decades?
We've actually sort of got a purpose for the first time. And 50 years ago, it was America getting there before the Russians, and it was a triumph of Western technology. Look how wonderful we are. This time, it's about, can we build moon bases? Can we actually use the moon as scientifically? And further that, there is the idea of using it as a base to get to Mars. And prime about all these things is, particularly the Martian aspect, is the input of big business. People like Elon Musk want to go to Mars and form a colony there.
And a Mars mission?
Yeah, so in order to make Mars work, we need kind of the next generation of rockets and spacecraft. And we think we've got something that will enable people to move to Mars for approximately $500,000.
$500,000?
Yeah.
Now, that's not the job of NASA. NASA is really, its prime purpose is to carry out science in space. And so it's trying to push all this kind of colonization onto private enterprise and get them to take over the impetus of that and let them get on with launching the space telescopes and things like that. So that's what's driving this new wave of going back to the moon.
I want to get into the implications of private companies leading this new charge to the moon, but tell me first, why do scientists want to get there? What promise does it still hold for us?
If you look at the moon, it's airless. It is an absolutely perfect encapsulation of the history of the solar system. Everything that has gone on throughout the history of the solar system can lie somewhere on the surface of the moon. Take the issue of water. We now think that water arrived on Earth from comets from the outer edge of the solar system in a series of bombardments. Now, you can't tell that on Earth anymore because it's so geologically active and biologically active. We've lost that history. On the moon, which is inert, that history is there. Mm. It's probably lying at the bottom of various craters of the way the layers of ice and water landed from outer space, from the outer edge of the solar system. It bombarded Earth. The record is there on the moon. It's gone on Earth.
So it's like a history of our solar system just waiting to be discovered.
Yes, that's one thing. Secondly, that you imagine these craters. Some of them have never seen sunlight. The bottom of these craters are completely sunless. And so down at the bottom, there's this ice with recording the history of the solar system and its water, its watery history. The other thing is they're therefore incredibly cold. They're only a few dozen degrees before above absolute zero. And you put instruments down there, they will be cooled to those temperatures.
Hmm.
Now, that's very hard to do. And NASA does it with the James Webb Space Telescope. It has to enormous shielding to keep its infrared, very heat-sensitive instruments down at those temperatures. On the moon, you can just stick them at the bottom of a crater. That's terrific. Two great scientific advantages there.
So interesting. The things that the James Webb Telescope can do, this extremely powerful telescope that's already changing our understanding of the cosmos, you could do those things even more powerfully if you had something like it based on the moon. If we had a telescope like that on the moon, what could we potentially see from up there?
Imagine the James Webb Telescope. It's up there. It seeks things in the infrared. Infrared radiation is absolutely perfect for looking for exoplanets. Exoplanets are planets that go around other stars. And with a powerful infrared telescope, you can actually study the atmospheres of planets going round other stars.
Mm.
And you can do that already with James Webb. If you could build something much bigger than that on the moon, taking advantage of its super cool craters, then you will be able to study in detail planets going around other stars. That gives you a chance to look for life elsewhere in the cosmos.
Okay, so if you're a scientist, the upside of all this private space exploration is that you get to take this equipment to the moon, you get to do all these experiments that might not have happened if you left this all to NASA alone. I get that. But what is the interest of these private companies? Is it prestige, or do they think that maybe being on the moon, exploring space, is good business?
They will be paid money for it by NASA. NASA will give them money to set up these bases.
Mm-hmm.
And NASA wants private industry to do it because it believes industry can keep the costs down. But at the back of the mind, you've got people like Musk and Bezos who want to see this as a stepping stone to Mars. And they've both said, you know, we want to go to Mars. We want to, you know, launch colonies there. Now, how much private industry puts in and how much NASA puts in, it's not for you and I to say, but there's a major drive from people like Musk to set up Martian colonies. And most people agree that you can't go to Mars straight away. You have to build a base somewhere. And a moon base might actually be cheaper and easier to run than something like the International Space Station. You have to fly your fuel up to the International Space Station. You don't if you're on the moon and you've got this water that you can electrolyze and turn into hydrogen and oxygen. You've got probably various metals.
Huh.
So once you're on the moon, it's actually easier to build a base from then hop into Mars.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of people living on the moon, living in these colonies, you're saying that's like not science fiction. That might be in our near future.
Yes. I mean, the first thing that will happen is they will build the equivalent of the International Space Station and put it in orbit around the moon. It'll be a smaller version of the ISS. It's called Gateway, and it'll have maybe four or five modules, and it will be, if not permanently occupied by humans, semi-permanently, you know, on shifts of 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off.
Mm.
And they will study the moon from this craft. And from there, they will direct the exploration of the lunar surface, looking for the resources that we've discussed, in particular, water crater, ice-filled craters and things like that. And that is, you know, that's next decade. That's not that far away.
That's so cool. What are the downsides? If you're a scientist, if you're someone invested in the health of the solar system, of allowing space exploration to be led by the likes of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and these other private companies?
I mean, just take the issue of some of the deepest craters on the moon. They are very, very deep and dark. But in these craters may well tell us exactly when water came to Earth, and water is a matrix of life, and it's incredibly precious.
Wow.
Equally, water is precious to colonists who will want to use it to drink and to turn to fuel, split it up into hydrogen and oxygen and burn it. So you've got that head-on collision coming there. There's another one, another good example, on the far side of the moon. It points out away from the Earth all the time, and because the one face of the moon is locked into ours, the one we always see on the far side, it's not touched by anything from Earth, in particular certain frequencies of radio waves. And on anywhere else near Earth, it's drowned out. But there, it's protected, and the scientists want to build huge, big radio telescope that would point out into the solar system, out into the universe, and it would give us precious information about the very origins of the universe itself. But if you've suddenly got satellites floating all around the moon, talking to each other in various radio frequencies, no matter how much you protect a certain frequency length, there will be leakage, and that will damage the prospects of that instrument. So you've got lots of crisis points coming.
So there could eventually be fights over access to water on the moon. There could be fights over satellites and radio frequencies. What I'm curious about, though, is who gets to decide in these situations? What does international law say about who gets to develop property in space? Could Amazon just buy the planet Venus one day? Who gets to claim the airspace above the moon or the craters and the ground on its surface?
It's an interesting question. I don't see Venus being a very high candidate, given it's one of the most inhospitable places in the in the solar system. But I take your point. You could get an asteroid or two taken over by Amazon or something like that. The 1967 Outer Space Treaty is very vague.
So far, 31 nations have joined in the treaty.
It says that you can't claim anything, claim a body or an area.
Philip Kaiser for America. Between West and East, this is the best cooperation for a long time.
You couldn't go up and do what Britain did in America, in the 17th century, and say, I claim this crater for the United Kingdom. You can't do that. What it's weak about is it doesn't really say anything about what you mine and where you mine it and where you take your resources. And this is the thing that's worrying scientists, and it's such that the International Astronomical Union is going to go to the UN this month and say, wait a minute, we're going to have to work out exactly where you mine and where you don't mine and what is a precious site. You're asking for trouble if you have a first-come, first-served attitude. And that's basically, at the moment, it is a first-come, first-served, although you can't claim it on a colonial basis, but you could exploit the mineral resources there.
I mean, you said that Outer Space Treaty was drafted in the 60s. I wonder, could they have ever imagined back then that it wouldn't be the US or the USSR leading space exploration, but private companies led by some of the richest people on Earth?
I think you're absolutely right. They never saw this coming.
Coming up, why we need to get the rules right quickly and what happens if we don't.
Oh, hello. Hey. Hi. It sounds like you're enjoying this episode, but if you're looking for something a little different, then Weekend might be your cup of tea. We feature the best pieces from The Guardian and Observer, from Marina Hyde and John Crace to celebrity interviews and lifestyle pieces. Listen every Saturday wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It sounds like we're in this interesting moment right now where science and commerce have struck a kind of alliance, right? Like, we're allowing private companies to launch spacecraft carrying scientific equipment. Everyone's working really well together. But one day soon, and not very far off, their interests are going to start to diverge.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I think there is, the scientists that I've spoken to are not antagonistic about the fact that people are going to set up colonies on the moon. They see it as a cheap ticket because Musk and Bezos, they will get the prices down. We'll get to the moon much more cheaply than we have been doing so. And they see the benefits for science there. But if there's an unrestricted gold rush, as it were, then we will lose something unless we think now about what it is and where it is we set up these bases, how we divvy up the craters. You know, that one's got water in it and that one's got water in it. But of the two, that one's more important scientifically, so you have the other one, that sort of thing.
Hmm. And how far off are we from these clashes coming out into the open before we really have to start divvying up resources on the moon?
Not this decade. We were supposed to be sending humans to the moon later on this year. It's been put back a year. America isn't going to land any more astronauts on the moon for 2 or 3 years yet. So we're far off even just from landing one or two astronauts and that's before they start thinking about building a colony. But given the rate at which these UN negotiations take, particularly for something as abstruse as space treaties, as they would see it, they ground very, very slowly. So unless we get on with it now, we do face trouble in the next decade.
Robin, when I look at our planet, I look at attempts to balance the interests of science and people and corporations. The thing that we find over and over again is that the balance is too often tipped towards private interests. So how likely are we to get that balance right in space when we rarely get it right back here on Earth?
I think that's a very, very good question. And I think the answer is probably very limited. I think we're having cocked up the Earth, we'll probably cock up the moon quite quickly afterwards. and then, you know, wait for a few more decades and we'll cock up Mars as well.
But the point here is the time to have these discussions, the time to win the battle over who gets to control space, that time is right now.
It is, exactly. And that is... It is interesting. One of the scientists I spoke to said it's only in the last couple of years that scientists have thought, wait a minute, this business of unrestricted private enterprise in space has got disadvantages. And one is the huge number of satellites, little mini satellites that are being launched. And suddenly those threaten the actual ability of astronomers to look out and look at the stars in optical wavelengths, just because there's so many satellites, tiny little things whizzing about, to give us our internet signal everywhere we want. And they suddenly realized, oh, wait a minute, and they looked to the moon. And 2 years ago, this wasn't an issue, even though we knew that we were going back to the moon. And they've suddenly thought, oh, God, wait a minute. And that is what's really pressing them and why they've set up a working party at the IAU, International Astronomical Union, and have pressed for this meeting with the UN this month.
What do you think good regulations in space would look like? What's the kind of balance you think we should be trying to strike?
I think they need to have some kind of agreement or some kind of body that sets up exactly where you can build a base, where you can build a telescope, where you can dig for water. I can't think of an equivalent body on Earth, unfortunately. Deep sea mining is a potential catastrophe here because there's nobody really in charge of divvying up the seabed on Earth. So we're going to have to think of something quite new. and something that we haven't thought about before.
Well, as those regulations develop, maybe you can come back and tell us about it.
Yes, if I'm spared.
Robin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Robin McKee, the Observer's science editor, whose coverage of the moon and other topics can be found at theguardian.com. And that's it for today and for this week. This episode was produced by Hattie Moyer and Tom Glasser. Sound design was by Solomon King. The executive producers were Elizabeth Casson and Phil Maynard. And we're back with you on Monday.
This is The Guardian.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.